Most were from Pergamon, but at least one was from farther afield. He knew, because he'd been tracking it since reaching the system's core edge. Amatnim had set him a pleasurable task, burning worlds and disrupting shipping throughout the outer worlds. There wasn't much to do, but he'd managed to amuse himself. The system was a backwater, but a vital one. Hundreds of petty shipping lanes and trade routes stretching in an invisible web between a few badly defended worlds. His holds groaned with slaves and plunder. He glanced at Slave.
"What shall we do with these, my pet? Shall we offer them up to the beasts of the void, or shall we strip them bare and add to our bounty?"
"Whatever you desire, O most magnanimous of masters." You could hear the resentment in her voice, like a lovely tune just to the edge of his perceptions.
"Yes, a good answer, my lovely one."
He caught her chin with a finger and drew her close. He could smell her fear now, hidden beneath a miasma of incense and sacred oils. She hated him and feared him, and he found it delicious.
"You are wise in your generation, Slave. It is why you are honored above all your fragile kind. Where would I be without your sagacity, my dear?"
"Wherever the gods willed you, my lord." Ashu considered this and laughed.
"Yes, luckily for both of us, they have willed me here."
He released her and leaned back.
"Take us in, all ahead full. I want them to see us coming. It makes for sweeter sport."
The engines groaned, and the cruiser's speed increased. The deck plates shivered in their housings, and Ashu licked his lips at the thought of the pleasures to come. He had been a soldier for as long as he could recall. It was not battle he enjoyed, so much as what came after. He always had. On the charnel fields of Kauth, he had spent many nights plundering the treasures of that world's broken cities. He'd always looked forward to a good looting. So many offerings to be placed on the altars of the gods. So many blessings to be received. He stroked his grey armour, tracing the sigils carved into the ceramite by the hands of his first slaves, now dead these many centuries. Some had met their fate on the altars. Others had died in battle. One he'd killed in self-defence after a summoning gone wrong. He missed them. Sometimes. None compared to Slave, of course. She'd been bred to servitude, born in the bowels of Kallion's yearning, like the rest of the bridge crew. He brushed his fingers along her spine, enjoying the animal fear that seeped from her paws. She wanted to kill him, he suspected. But she dared not. Her frustration mingled with her fear in such delightful ways. He looked forward to the day when he finally offered her up to the gods. Her screams would be as the sweetest music. She stepped behind his throne, dragging her chains after her. He did not reprimand her for moving without his permission. Other matters had his attention. His quarry was within range of his weapon's batteries, and had not yet noticed him. Or if they had, they were resigned to their fate. He studied the ships, puzzled. Something was wrong. The Vox was silent. It should have been filled with screams of panic by now. He gestured with a finger.
"Scan the frequencies. They're being too quiet."
His slaves snapped to attention, and he watched them work in satisfaction. The bridge of a ship was no place for a space marine. Some among his brothers didn't agree. They didn't trust slaves or mutants or even cultists. But Ashu knew the trick of it. Fear was a chain stronger than any forged by man. It bound the soul, leaving the body free to work.
"Patch them through to my Vox channel," he said. "Continue to close. Once they're within firing range, destroy the closest vessel."
The frequencies buzzed like wasps, empty of all sound save static. Ashu stiffened. They were being jammed. Someone was jamming his prey's sensors. Why?
He signaled one of his crew. "Backtrace the jamming signal. Find it. I want to know why."
"Incoming!" A slave shrieked suddenly. Alarm klaxons wailed. Ashu jolted in his throne as impact alarms added their voices to the cacophony. "Multiple impacts! Shields holding!"
"What was that?"
Ashu demanded. But even as he asked the question, he knew the answer. A trap. The convoy had been used as bait to lure him in. He grimaced as another convulsion racked the command deck.
"Get me a firing solution," he roared. "Contact the captain of the Almes."
"It's gone, my lord," Slave said demurely. Ashu turned.
"What?"
"Gone, my lord. As is the Skull Eater and Lucius's blade. They're both burning off our bow." She gestured at the viewscreen. Ashu stared in incomprehension. His escorts were dying, and he was blind to their killer. He hammered at the controls on his throne, bringing up hull feeds and long-distance telemetry. The commanders of the remaining escorts were screaming for orders, but he had none to give them. On the viewscreen, motes of deadly light stretched from unknown sources. Another escort tumbled away, ruptured, venting air and corpses. Hololithic data unspooled before him as he searched for the attackers to no avail. They were jamming his sensors as they jammed those of the convoy. He looked up as sparks cascaded across the bridge. Slaves yelped in pain and beat at the flames that clung to their rags. Telemetry runes blinked on his display, isolating potential power sources. They were using the debris fields to mask themselves. He could feel it. Cunning.
"Come to a new heading," he snarled, and rattled off coordinates. "Get us in broadside range of the debris, now!"
The ship's turning felt ponderous to him, though he knew it was anything but. Even as it did so, he felt that he'd missed something, important. The broken stretch of the debris field came into view.
"Magnify!" The image expanded. "Again!"
He saw them then. A sleek, black monster crouched in the dark. A strike cruiser. It was surrounded by handfuls of smaller vessels. These frenzied forth as Kallian's yearning came about. They swarmed like flies.
"Prime the defense turrets! Knock them out of the void!"
He felt the rumble as the gunnery decks opened up. Something was still off. One ship, even a strike cruiser, wasn't an ambush. There was something he wasn't seeing.
"We've come about, my lord," a slave cried. "Tell the lance batteries to fire, now! Target the debris fields. If we can cause a chain reaction..."
He trailed off as the answer came to him. He knew what he'd missed.
"No, belay that! Engines, reverse full, quickly!"
Too late. He felt the shields buckle as vessels broke free of the convoy and fired. A lucky hit, or well calculated. They'd hidden well, using the civilian vessels first for bait and then for cover. Cold. He could almost admire such ruthless pragmatism, if only they weren't trying to kill him.
"Send a distress signal! Alert the fleet!"
Shield generators overloaded and flickered out throughout the cruiser. His throne's display flashed as the smaller vessels swarmed his own, attacking from all directions. They'd drawn him in, pulled him into position, and now he would pay for it. Fires were burning unchecked below on the command deck. Damage reports came in across the vox, even as it crackled and died. He made to push himself to his feet, but stopped as he heard the clink of chains.
"Slave?"
Loops of silver chains settled across his neck. Surprised, he fell back. The loops tightened as crewmen crept through the smoke towards him, carrying jagged shards of metal, as if they were spears and knives. He forced his head up, seeking Slave out. She was braced behind his throne, using all of her weight to try to strangle him. Angry, he clawed at the loops and dragged them away from his throat. Links popped and snapped, even as the others reached him. They came at him in silence. He killed the first and the second with his bare hands, and the third and the fourth. But still, they came, determined. And the loops of chain drew tighter and tighter about his throat. Slave was singing as she hauled her improvised noose back. A hymn, he thought, though he couldn't think where she might have heard it from. They pinned his arms with their bodies, held his legs. No fear in them now. He wondered if there ever really had been. As they fumbled for his sidearm, he looked up at Slave.
"I am very proud of you,"
he gurgled, as two of them hefted his bolt pistol in trembling hands and placed it awkwardly to his brow. It was done in an instant. Kallian's yearning followed its commander a few moments later. Imatnin watched as ident runes spun across the projection. The sensor feed showed the orbital dockyards above Pergamon. Damaged as they were still functional. Another blessing from the gods. The world had offered stiffer resistance than he'd expected. Or maybe it had simply been the gods' way of preparing him for the true test to come. The Glory Eternal trawled the stars now, on a slow heading to Almais. A few ships followed in the battle barge's wake, those who'd made it through the assault unscathed and weren't deployed elsewhere. It would take time for the rest of the fleet to make repairs, rearm and catch up, hence his lack of hurry. Imatnin was not of a mind to sacrifice a numerical advantage out of impatience, unlike some. He glanced at Lacimhue. The Dark Apostle stood nearby, staring at a telemetric projection with ill-disguised impatience. Now that he knew what was at stake, he seemed to vibrate with fanatical exuberance. If Lacimhue had been in charge, they would already have been in orbit about Almais, engaged in another siege, and they would have paid a heavy toll. The gods thirsted for blood, but they desired victory above all else. Too often, Imatnin's brothers allowed themselves to be blinded by the former and lost sight of the latter. That, as Corferin had often said, was the issue with Erebus and his ilk. They traded victory for success. They would rather win 1,000 skirmishes than a war. And that was why, when the Urizen returned, his wrath would fall upon them. They had been given a gift, and they had squandered it. Freed from their chains, they had immediately sought new masters. They had turned on one another and made the Legion into a battleground. But soon, that would end. With the prisoner of Almais freed and all secrets come to light, Erebus would lose his standing in the Legion at last. The stalemate between factions would end, and the true faith would be united once more. Imatnin closed his eyes just for a moment, imagining the glories to come. Would Lorgar acknowledge him, as Corferin had promised? He wished it so. He hoped that the Urizen would see the light in him and find it familiar. As if reading his thoughts, Lacimhue grunted. Imatnin turned.
Yes, brother.
Another barnacle adds itself to our hull.
Imatnin glanced at the sensor feed. A pic display from one of the battle barge's launch bays showed transport ships sliding into waiting berths as crews of slaves raced to greet the new arrivals.
How many does that make?
56,
Lacimhue said, watching the data twist across the projections. Sometimes it made faces of the Dark Apostle. There were demons in the circuitry. Imatnin knew. Little ones, mostly, brief sparks of the Great Fire. Amusing. In moderation. The newcomers were pirates. The system was infested with them. They lurked in the asteroid belts and debris fields that marked much of the rim expanse, venturing forth to attack lone vessels or raid the farthest worlds. Imatnin had sent envoys among them soon after entering the system. They were a ready-made fighting force. They knew the territory, and they would require little direction for his purposes.
Excellent,
Imatnin smiled, pleased. It was always better when they came of their own free will, when they acknowledged the might of the gods and bowed their heads.
They are useless. This is useless. What purpose does it serve?
Imatnin sighed, a theatrical gesture and one he knew annoyed the Dark Apostle.
It serves our purpose, and through us, that of the gods.
We are wasting time. These stragglers will only slow us down.
We have time to waste. What is time save a collection of moments gifted us by the gods? Who are you to attribute greater or lesser value to any given moment?
He smiled.
I think you forget yourself, Lacimhue.
Lacimhue turned, tattooed features twisted into a bemused expression.
Was that supposed to mean something? What is this gibberish that drips from your lips, Imatnin?
Imatnin put on a bland expression.
Why, are these not the words of Makesh the Rancorous, as written in the 42nd Epistle of Ruination?
Lacimhue frowned.
The homilies of Makesh are forbidden, as you well know. Erebus himself has decreed it so.
Erebus makes many decrees.
Imatnin sighed sadly.
How is a humble soldier such as myself to keep up? He made a show of examining himself. I trust my battle plate is the correct shade this cycle. The Dark Council had decreed that there were only a certain number of proper colours for battle plate, if it was to be painted. Deviance from the permitted shades was punished harshly. Unfortunately, the list of approved hues changed almost daily, much to the consternation of the devout. Corferin had explained it to a Matnim once. Such little things kept the faithful snapping at each other over matters of dogma and left Erebus free to do as he wished. He was like a stone dropped into a pond. The ripples he created affected the whole of the Legion, and often for the worse. That was why he had to be removed. But not just removed. Erased. As if he had never been. All influence stripped, all supporters gone. Otherwise, he would simply be a martyr, and Corferra knew all about the power of martyrs. Lacomhue shook his head.
There is no paint on your armour.
Amatnim nodded, as if in thanks.
Ah,
that is true. He smiled widely.
Once again, you have quieted my fears, Lacomhue. Truly, you speak with the voice of the gods themselves. I am in awe of your piousness.
Lacomhue's expression was that of a man tasting poison. His hand twitched towards the ritual blade, sheathed at his side, and Amatnim's smile widened.
Do not think harshly of me, brother. I know it would be easier if I were a fool, but I am not. And this is not foolishness. We come to do a great thing, it is true. But we cannot forget our legion's purpose in our haste to claim glory. One soul at a time, or a thousand at once, we must bring them all to the light of the primordial truth. Only then will the gods see us and know us as their truest sons.
There are some who might disagree with you on that score,
Lacomhue said bitterly. He turned away.
Not just in our own ranks.
Amatnim laughed.
And so, is your faith so brittle that the scepticism of lesser souls can cause it to break?
He stepped up beside the Dark Apostle.
Oh, for shame. What would Erebus say to that?
Lacomhue stiffened and glared. Amatnim grinned.
Faith, brother, you should try to muster some. If the gods did not wish them here, they would not be here, as you would not be here.
He grinned.
Besides, the ranks of our chattel grow thin. We need more warm bodies, and these degenerates will play the part well enough. They are eager for war, and we will give them one.
They won't be enough. You saw Kellen's report. The White Scars are here. The lapdogs of the Corpse Emperor have come, and we are out of time.
For once, Lacomhue was right. While the appearance of the White Scars at Pergamon had been brief, it had made an impression. Amatnim had hoped to avoid conflict with their degenerate cousins, but when man wished, the gods mocked.
They lack the numbers to meet us head-on, he said. Else why would they retreat?
It seemed right, in a strange sort of way, that they had come. 10,000 years ago, the White Scars had been instrumental in preserving the lie of the Imperium. That they should be here now, attempting to preserve another lie, was only fitting.
Ashu and the other outriders will be more than enough to keep them occupied.
That might prove difficult, Kellum said.
The other word-bearer strode towards them, followed by a gaggle of mutant crewmen. He barked a command, and they scattered to their stations.
Just received a vox burst from Palok of the Butcher Blade. He was just attacked by our cousins in white, 2 grid points spinward. Lost most of his escorts, and his ship is all but gutted. He managed to smash up one of theirs, but it was all he could do to keep his ship in one piece.
Disappointing. But what does that have to do with Ashu?
He was 3 points coreward, running down refugees from the outlying worlds. You know how he likes easy prey.
Yes, and...
Kellum laughed.
It wasn't so easy.
Amatnim turned.
Dead.
The other word-bearer shrugged.
We've lost contact with him, I suspect so.
Amatnim grunted.
not unexpected, but worrisome all the same.
White scars?
Unknown.
Even more worrisome. Amatnim ran a hand over his head.
Our cousins always did favour hit-and-run attacks.
And they've always been good at concealing their numbers,
Lackamhugh said.
They may have pickets strung across the core, waiting for us. They'll be gnawing our flanks from here to Almes. We should hunt them down now, before they bleed us further.
No, that's what they want.
Abatnam frowned. He gestured to Kellum.
Scan all frequencies. I want to know what's changed.
We know that they're here,
Lackamhugh protested.
What else do you need?
Why they are here, and not at Almes.
It's obvious, isn't it? They're buying time, and you're giving it to them.
Yes, but who are they buying time for? What is waiting for us at Almes?
He looked at the Dark Apostle.
The White Scars are pragmatic. They would not leave Almes unprotected. If they are here, then someone is there.
He looked at Kellum.
Find out what you can. In the meantime, I'm going to greet our new recruits. We may well have need of them before too much longer.
Lackamhugh followed Amatnam out onto the observation deck, above the landing bays. Down below, the last of the transports carrying the pirate representatives settled into a berth with a growl of thrusters. There were hundreds of them, petty war chiefs and their bodyguards, militaristic separatists and gaudily clad buccaneers, the mad, the lost, and the vile. Every system had them, to some extent. The closer to the Great Rift you went, the more of them there were. Almes was very close indeed. The bay echoed with the noise of their gathering. To Lackamhugh, it was akin to the chattering of apes. Subhuman trash, good for nothing more than sacrifice. Then, that was Amatnim's reason for seeking them out. They needed chattel, and Amatnim had found it. Even so, it was distasteful. Mortals were best kept at a distance, where their weakness would not infect others. Two, Lackamhugh preferred a higher quality of pawn. He glanced back, his blade slave stumped in his wake, moving with ponderous grace. They stank of treachery and the warp, and their bodies writhed beneath their ravaged battleplate. They were, at once, his greatest sin and his greatest blessing. He studied the closest. Demeen, he thought, though he couldn't be sure. The other was Ortalu. Had been Ortalu 100 years ago. Demeen met his gaze blankly. There was something moving behind his mask. They were still changing, both of them, becoming more and more the perfect weapons the gods required. It was an arduous process to create such slaves. It had consumed the lives of over 100 witches and a piece of Lackamhugh's own soul. But the deed was done, and they were his, as much a part of him now as his hands. They would fight and die for him, if need be. He looked back at Amatnim and wondered whether it might well be necessary. Erebus's commands had been explicit. Amatnim was to be converted rather than butchered, if possible. Lackamhugh had spent months allowing Amatnim to think him nothing more than another fanatical attack dog. He tested Amatnim, sending the overly ambitious against him, all in an effort to maintain the cohesion of the host Amatnim had built. It was a delicate balancing act, one that required him to act the fool, to resist his natural impulses. Amatnim was arrogant, believing himself blessed by the Pantheon, when nothing could be further from the truth. Erebus had explained it all so clearly before they departed Sicarius. What Amatnim planned might shatter the Legion to its very bedrock. The unity they'd maintained in the wake of the retreat from Terra and the wars that followed would vanish in an instant, if he were allowed to succeed. Unfortunately, he was too good a commander to waste on the altar of necessity. Erebus played the long game. He never sacrificed a pawn without cause. The gods had showed him that Amatnim would prove useful in the coming carnage. The Legion needed a war leader like Amatnim Erneighbor Slash, but they did not need the secret he sought to come to light. Something would have to be done. Victory was necessary in order to maintain Amatnim's reputation as a commander.
but he could not be allowed to free the prisoner he sought. Lacomhue did not truly understand that part. For whatever reason, Erebus feared this lost brother. He considered using that to his advantage, but then thought better of it. Whatever Amatnem's opinion of him, Lacomhue was no fool, else Erebus would never have set him this task. But for the moment, his only concern was surviving long enough to think of a way to achieve his aims. Amatnem laughed. Lacomhue turned to see him conversing with Apis. The grey-clad word-bearer and his followers watched the pirates from the edge of the deck, bolt guns held at rest. Lacomhue studied the warrior, discreetly, wondering if he was the way into Amatnem's heart. Amatnem trusted Apis, which was unwise but understandable. Apis was the perfect tool, blunt, plain-spoken and dutiful. He had no ambition, save to serve. With 100 like him, Amatnem would have had no need for a host. If Apis counseled him to consider Erebus's words, Amatnem might listen.
"Step aside, fools,"
someone murmured from behind him. Lacomhue looked back. One of his own followers, Yattle, stood some distance away, kept at bay by the blade slaves.
"Yattle,"
Lacomhue said, gesturing for his bodyguards to step aside.
"What news?"
Yattle hurried towards him, moving stiffly due to the wounds he'd taken on Pergamon.
"Kellim was right, curse him," he said. "Ashu is dead. So are Tokjus and Klum."
Lacomhue had said his subordinate to confirm Kellum's report. Amatnem hadn't said anything about either Tokjus or Klum, which boded ill.
"The White Scars?"
Yattle nodded as he looked down at the pirates.
"It's like they're everywhere at once."
Lacomhue grunted in consternation and turned away.
"Or there are more of them than we think. We could be sailing into a trap."
After what he'd seen on Pergamon, he could almost believe it. It made no sense that the Imperium, weak as it was, would leave a world like Almace undefended, or as good as, especially now.
"What do we do?"
Yattle hissed.
"What we have been doing. Wait and watch."
Yattle hesitated. Lacomhue looked at him.
"What is it? What if he's right?"
Lacomhue frowned.
"You know that he is not. He has allowed himself to be blinded by the doddering lunatic Cor Farron, as so many of our brothers have."
He leaned close.
"Or do you doubt the word of Erebus?"
Yattle looked away.
No, my lord." "Good. Go. I tire of looking at you."
He turned away as Yattle bowed. He felt a tinge of regret. Yattle had been a loyal enough servant, but Amatnem had planted a seed of doubt in his hearts. Lacomhue could smell it on the warrior's breath. Soon, Yattle might try to spread that doubt to others. The time was fast coming where a third blade slave might be added to his coterie. Doubt could not be allowed to fester. Down below, the noise levels were rising. The pirates were boisterous, making enough racket to fill the bay. Some of it was excitement, mostly it was fear. The Glory Eternal was not a demon vessel, but it was still imposing in a way that mortals would find off-putting. Lacomhue found it equally distasteful, albeit for different reasons. Amatnem had carefully purged his ranks of the most obvious demonic influences after they'd entered the system, unleashing them on the Rim Worlds. Ships and crews changed by the warp had their own ideas about how to conduct a military campaign. It was often more akin to a predator stalking easy prey, all instinct and hunger. That act embodied Amatnem's philosophy, as far as Lacomhue was concerned. A discarding of the blessings the gods had given them, in favour of more mundane methodology. A denial of the obvious, in favour of the traditional. It had taken weeks of argument to even get him to agree to unleashing the Neverborn on Almace, if they ever arrived. Amatnem preferred to use the more malleable human cultists and renegades as chattel, rather than relying on the truest children of the gods. More evidence of his lack of faith. More proof of his unworthiness. And yet, the gods seemed pleased. Lacomhue could only conclude that they wished for Amatnem to succeed, that the prisoner he sought was fated to be freed, in some fashion, What happened after would be telling. Perhaps the gods would remove their hand from Amatnim at the moment of his victory. He would not be the first champion to be raised up so that he might be hurled down from a greater height. The gods had a sense of humour, after all. For now, Lacimhugh could but do as Erebus had commanded. He would preserve Amatnim from his own foolishness and continue to test him, to seek his weaknesses. And when he had found them, well... His blade slaves stirred, sensing his sudden desire. He waved them to silence.
"Be still," he murmured.
Domine growled softly. He could feel their hunger. It was a palpable heat, and they sniffed at the air, eager for mortal blood. He traced a sigil before them, tightening the bindings about their souls, and they grudgingly subsided. A skirl of crude bone pipes caught his attention. Mutants, clad in sackcloth and plundered armour, tramped across the deck, piping an eerie tune. It was a wild, frenetic thing, a whirling dissonance of shrill noise and stamping hooves. They were followed by an honour guard of mortal cultists, all bearing Amatnim's personal heraldry on their battered carapace armour. As they took up positions around their lord and master, Amatnim extended his hand to Lacimhugh.
"Come, brother! It is time to formally greet our new allies."
"Huh? Am I to be included, then?"
"Always, Lacimhugh. Come, let us not keep them waiting."
The cultists and bestial musicians escorted them as they descended the steps leading down from the observation deck. Amatnim did so with stately speed, one hand on the pommel of his axe rake. Lacimhugh hung back, allowing the other word-bearer to have his moment. The gathered pirates drew back as they reached the lower deck.
"Welcome,"
Amatnim said. His voice carried easily, despite the cavernous space.
"To see you here fills me with joy."
He swept their ranks with his gaze as they fell silent. Lacimhugh followed his example. Few met his eye, and those that did so only with great reluctance. Pirates and outlaws, surviving on the system's fringes, they had no discipline, and no real use beyond their ability to die in place of one of his brothers. But they were plentiful, and almost an army. A fleet, if one was being charitable. Close to a dozen frigates and a handful of smaller vessels, mostly repurposed ore trawlers or private yachts, had responded to Amatnim's call. Not many in the grand scheme of things, but enough for their purposes, he concluded grudgingly. He could see demons lurking among them, little things bound to no god, or one too small to be known. Things of spite and malice. They clung to their hosts, whispering in voices only some could hear. Some among the pirates bore more familiar markings. He saw the shadow of Khorne's blade on several, and smelled the faintest odour of Nurgle's rot seeping from the pores of one. Two were entwined in the loving embrace of Slaanesh, though they likely did not realize it. Even Tzeentch had his playthings here, secret witches and dabblers in haruspicy and fortune-telling. It was no wonder they had come so readily. The gods were already in them, driving them to whatever doom awaited them. He watched Amatnim cajole and compliment the mortals, acting as if their presence were not a burden but a gift. Amatnim had a way with mayflies. Even Erebus admitted that, though only in private, and only to Lacimhugh. It was rare that someone who could speak so eloquently, and with such fervour, did not take up the Crozius. Perhaps that was for the best. As a dark apostle, Amatnim would have had undue influence. As it was, he was little more than an indulged pet. It was clear enough what Cor Farron saw in him. There was a fire there. A blazing kernel of faith that was Amatnim's only true saving grace, which made everything else about him a frustrating puzzle.
"Who speaks for you?"
Amatnim said at last. Muttering was the only reply. The assembled captains glared at one another with wary dislike. It was only to be expected, Lacimhugh thought. They were rivals, after all.
"Come, come,"
Amatnim chided.
"Surely there is one among you who is trusted enough to take part in my councils of war. I would treat you as allies, not as dogs."
Lacimhugh stifled a snort. Amatnim glanced at him,
but said nothing. There was some shuffling in the crowd and the gleam of half-drawn blades. Lagomhugh heard the click of weapons and the whine of power packs. He half raised his croziers. Finally, a gaudily dressed figure stepped forward. The pirate was tall and gangly, but richly dressed. He wore a coat of iridescent material, and his head had been shaved to the quick. Tattoos covered his vulpine features, and a plethora of weapons hung from him, blades mostly, and grenades. An Ondari shuriken weapon was thrust through his belt, and his hand rested protectively over it.
"I am Genor, Prince of the Outer Sector."
As he spoke, Lacamue saw the shadow of something monstrous and stinking of sickly sweet perfumes looming above him. The Dark Prince had his hook set deep in the soul of this one. He wore desire and ambition like armor. His need was a silken halo, throbbing in time to his heartbeat. Laughter greeted his proclamation, and Ganor turned, shuriken pistol in hand. He fired smoothly, and a pirate screamed. The others fell silent. Above the bay, Apis and his warriors had raised their weapons, taking aim at the crowd. Amatnim raised a hand, gesturing for peace.
"Prince, is it?"
he said, smiling.
"You are royalty, then?"
"I was. And now?" "I still am."
Ganor didn't quite meet Amatnim's eyes, but Lacamhugh was impressed nonetheless. He was either brave or a fool. Or both. Regardless, the gods clearly favored him.
"They say you plan to take Almes."
"I do."
"For yourself?"
"No. Once I have what I want, the planet is of no concern."
Ganor nodded slowly. He glanced at the rest of the pirates, and then back at Abatnim.
"Can I have it?"
More shouting. Lacamhugh wondered if Ganor would have to shoot another of his fellow captains. At this rate, they were going to run out. But Amatnim silenced them with a sharp gesture.
"If you wish. If you can take it. Perhaps I will even help you."
Ganor nodded again.
"Then my ship is yours."
"I never doubted it,"
Amatnim said. He looked around.
"What about the rest of you?"
Silence, but only for a moment. One by one, they all shouted their oaths. Amatnim turned to Lacamhugh.
"It seems our fleet has grown, brother."
"So it seems,"
Lacamhugh said.
"Only time will tell if it is enough."
Chapter 12. 650830. At Oasis System. Corward Edge. The troop compartment of the Thunderhawk shook as the gunship set down its landing gear. Proximity klaxons wailed, and smoke from damaged engines filled the compartment. But Arik's helm filtered the noise and toxins out. The White Scar could hear shots striking the gunship's hull, and the grinding roar of the craft's assault cannons clearing the deployment zone of hostiles. If all had gone according to plan, they would be in the launch bay of the enemy vessel. Things had come to a head rather quickly. The foe had learned well the lessons of the last few encounters. Distance meant death. They'd close quickly this time, looking to board the silent horsemen. Sabota had responded in kind, launching every gunship in the battle barge's bays into the void. A vessel's shields were only good against weapons batteries and lance fire. Gunships could slip right through and use a craft's own launch bays against it, if the pilot was skilled or lucky, or both. Sabodan's Brotherhood had perfected the strategy, employing it many times in the unceasing void war above Armageddon. But this ship was no Orc Hulk. Instead, it was a sleek cruiser belonging to a long excommunicated legion. Arik was eager to test himself against foes other than greenskins. He'd learned all he could from orcs. Time for some new lessons. The squad voxlink crackled.
"We're in, Sergeant!"
"Acknowledged," Arik said. "Open the doors."
The pilot chuckled.
"If you insist, prepare for opening."
"On your feet, my warhawks,"
Arik rumbled. He rose from his restraint throne.
"We have a crew to butcher and a ship to take. Up, brothers, up!"
He went to the rear of the specially modified compartment and hit a release valve on the armored cell that occupied it. The cell opened with a hiss of cold, recycled air, revealing the massive shape of a dreadnought. Arik hesitated, staring up at the tribal totems and savage decorations which marked the scarred, white chassis of the ancient war machine. Then, steeling his nerve, he pounded a fist against the emboss sarcophagus.
"Wake up, Malamia! It is time!"
"At last!"
Malamir rumbled. The dreadnought's voice was accompanied by a growl of static. He flexed his power claw eagerly as he stepped out of his cell. The deck shivered beneath his grinding tread.
"Keep your talwar sheathed, little brothers. I will clear a path."
"Take your time, old man," Arik said, as he quickly stepped aside, allowing the dreadnought to stomp past. "Don't burst the gasket."
One of the dreadnought's optic sensors rotated in its housing.
"Is that you, Arik? It must be. Only you are so foolish as to speak to me so."
"And here I thought we were friends, old man."
Arik grinned up at the blinking sensor. He knew Malamir could see him, in some fashion.
"Leave some for us, please."
Malamir was silent for a moment. Then,
"No promises."
The dreadnought turned his attentions to the rest of the squad.
"Get out of my way, little brothers."
Then, more loudly,
"Out of my way, I said."
The dreadnought shoved his way towards the disembarkation point, forcing the rest of Arik's squad to scramble out of his path. A moment later, the ramp of the gunship opened like a flower of metal and heat, dropping to the deck with a thunderous clang. Malamir stumped down the ramp, ignoring the weapons fire that danced across his chassis.
"Is that all the greeting you can muster, insects?"
he growled as he reached the deck.
"Don't you know who I am?"
Arik laughed, despite the shots that glanced off his battle plate. At the top of the ramp, the white scars returned fire, giving ululating yells as their shots struck home.
"I don't think they do," Arik shouted. "Kill them, grandfather!"
"I am Malamir of Yuzhan,"
the dreadnought roared, his voxcaster set to maximum.
"I am the White Wolf of the Lakes. Hear my howl!"
His assault cannon cycled to life. He pivoted, letting the weapon play across the hold with a high-pitched whir. Hundreds of rounds were loosed in a matter of seconds, and the rate of fire was such that those assault fighters still berthed in the hold shook in their struts or collapsed utterly. Fuel canisters exploded, filling the hold with burning rivers of promethium. Malamir advanced through the inferno, his assault cannon singing. Wherever he turned, mortals died, or new fires sprang up, adding to the blaze.
"Go!"
Arik's voice echoed across the squad box. He was moving even as he spoke. Strange alarm klaxons wailed, and the walls of the bay quivered like a fearful animal as he ran. His bolt pistol bucked in his hand as targeting runes danced across his helmet's display. He fired without regard for the smoke, advancing through the heat and flames of Malamir's rampage towards the greatest number of targets. His squad fanned out in his wake, bolters thundering. They would take the bay and then move on to whatever passed for a command deck on heretic vessels. It was the quickest way to take a ship like this, kill its command staff. From the bridge, whole decks could be isolated. The life support cut off, power rerouted. If the spirits of rain and war were with them, they might even be able to salvage the vessel once the system had been purged of foes. But, failing that, they'd scuttle it and send it into the heart of the nearest star. He felt the deck twitch beneath him and knew more gunships were arriving, swarming into the open bays.
"They made a mistake, not running,"
one of the others, Kirsch, grunted.
"Ha! Should have tucked tail at the moment they caught our colors!"
"Shouldn't have come here at all," Arik replied. shouldn't have followed the whispers of the wrong spirits, shouldn't have sold their souls to devils. Lots of things they shouldn't have done. Too late to make up for it now.
A targeting rune settled onto a flailing mortal's back. He snapped off a shot and watched with satisfaction as the round punched through the man, ripping him open and painting the air red.
They owe a blood price, and we will collect.
The first gunships have secured their landing base, Canem said, watching the hololithic projections that hovered in the air.
Most were pig feeds, transmitted from the helms of the White Scars assault squads, relaying the boarding efforts. Sabodan Khan nodded and sat back in his command throne.
Good.
He signalled one of the bridge serfs.
Pass the order to press the assault to the escorts, an attack craft, but tell them to concentrate fire on weapons arrays and thrusters. Let my warriors do their work.
He turned his attentions back to the viewscreen, satisfied that his orders would be relayed correctly. There was no point in having serfs if you didn't trust them to see their assigned tasks properly. The hunt was going well. The enemy fleet was scattered, for the most part, raiding the outlying worlds. That made them easy prey, at least for the moment. Attack craft from Orlando's Wrath had scouted ahead, relaying the enemy's numbers and position. There were only a few vessels this time. A cruiser of an unknown make and a trio of escorts that looked to have been cobbled together by someone with a macabre sense of humour. Sabodan had divided the fleet into two, and then again. Raven's Valor, with the Drusus, was making for the other side of the debris belt, moving into position to intercept potential reinforcements. Orlando's Wrath and the Crassus had engaged the enemy alongside the Silent Horseman.
Are you sure it was wise, sending the gunships? Canem asked.
Sabodan shrugged.
No, but our brothers needed something to do, and they practically invited us aboard. If Arik and the others can take that vessel out of the fight without us having to engage, so much the better.
He stroked his beard, smiling thinly.
We must conserve all available resources, Shaman, including what ships we have left.
They'd lost at least three escorts since engaging the enemy at Pergamon, and hundreds of attack craft. Thousands of crew were dead, their bodies jettisoned into space or stored below decks. Every skirmish wore them down a little more, and used up a bit more of the weapon stores. The cruisers would need to rearm and refit themselves soon, but that would mean falling back to Almace, and they couldn't do that. Not yet. On the viewscreen, the attack craft launched by Orlando's Wrath duelled in the black with the enemy's gunships. Sensor feeds showed the ruptured remnants of boarding torpedoes, drifting near the Silent Horseman. Idly, Sabodan magnified the images. Crimson armoured figures floated into the void. Some were still alive. It was hard to kill a space marine, even a traitor. They struggled free of the wreckage and pushed themselves off, attempting a controlled drift towards the battle barge, a desperate tactic.
Look at them, Shaman. If they were anyone else, I might admire them.
Canem grunted but said nothing. Sabodan pressed the point.
Were we in their position, would we not attempt the same? Whatever else, they have courage at least.
We would not allow ourselves to be caught so easily. Canem said. If you listen to spirit rather than your own soul, they will inevitably lead you astray. You should alert nearby attack craft before one of them manages to reach us. I'd rather not have to hunt one of those abominations through the bowels of the ship.
Sabodan gestured sharply, and a serf relayed the order. Anti-personnel batteries opened up from concealed ports along the lower starboard hull of the battle barge. Swiftly, the floating crimson shapes were reduced to shredded masses of meat and metal, to join the rest of the debris.
Kiel is unhappy, Canem said.
Is he?
We're using his people as bait.
We're protecting them.
Even so,
Sabodan grunted.
He has said nothing of this to me.
It is easy to see. His face hides nothing during the command briefings.
And the others?
Canem frowned.
Ogilvy accepts it. She's a hard one, too old not to understand. Belmont is too frightened of making a mistake to notice.
Sir Bowden relaxed slightly.
Will he cause trouble?
No. He knows what's at stake.
Then why bother telling me, Shaman? Information without use is nothing more than gossip. If Keel is angry, let him be angry. So long as he fights, his emotional state is of little concern.
Annoyed by the conversation, Sir Bowden called up a telemetry display, studying the enemy's disposition.
They came looking for us, he muttered.
Canham looked down at the display.
How can you tell?
Here's their positioning when we first sighted them. Look at the way they're spread out. They're maximizing the range of their augurs.
He tugged on his beard.
They've probably already sent a distress signal, unless Rakan managed to intercept it.
They're bait?
No. Scouts, we're being hunted.
Sir Bowden looked at the viewscreen. New stars blossomed in the black. An escort, one of theirs, twisted in place as barnacles of plasma spread across its hull. He stiffened. Something was amiss. He saw what it was a moment later.
Ogilvy is out of position. I've warned her about that before.
She is not the only warrior to forget her place in the line amid the heat of battle,
Canham said meaningfully.
She's old enough to know better.
So were you.
Sir Bowden laughed.
Luckily, I had you by my side to chastise me, Shaman.
He sat back and shook his head.
We will finish them off and fall back into the asteroid field. And then do it all again tomorrow.
That is the way of it, my Khan.
So it is,
Sir Bowden murmured. He watched the viewscreen, knowing that all decisions had been made. There was nothing to do now but wait for things to resolve themselves as they must. He was impatient. He knew this, and strove to correct the flaw. But it was hard, especially in moments like this. Void War was so slow. It lacked immediacy, the rush of blood and the smell of death. It was a war of numbers, waged across light years. Two, it was a game of nerve, of cost and benefit. Ships might drift closer and closer, only to pass by without ever firing a shot. Battle was only joined when it was a sure thing, or there was no other choice. It was a game for hunters or murderers, not for warriors. And Sir Bowden was a warrior first and a hunter second. He envied those who'd boarded the enemy vessel. He wished he were leading them personally. But such was not his duty. A Khan could not limit himself to a single battle. He had to attend to the greater war. Still, at least he was here, rather than on Almais. He could only imagine the boredom that must be gripping Karos and Calder, with nothing and no one to fight. Even as he thought this, however, his hand felt the hilt of his Talwar, and he longed to draw it, to put it to use against the enemy. He glanced up and saw Canham staring at him. The expression on the Stormseer's face was unsettling.
What is it, Shaman? Do the spirits whisper to you?
Always, my Khan.
And what do they whisper?
Canham looked away.
That you will get your wish.
He sounded old and tired.
There is death on the wind, my Khan. Theirs and ours.
Sir Bowden thought about this for a moment, and then grinned fiercely.
Good.
Almais, Primaris Grade Cardinal World. Ord lifted the last slab of ferrocrete into place, blocking in the northern processional, past the Pilgrim's Gate.
Arc clump,
he said. Mortal engineers hurried forward, tools in hand. He readied the clamp as they began to drill holes in the slab. As with the rest, it would be bolted to the street, so that the bulwark would be all but unmovable. Sparks flew as the mortals worked, and Ord watched them impatiently. There were another 10 bulwarks to build, at staggered intervals before the gate could be considered secure. The Pilgrim's Gate was small, as such edifices went. A simple archway of carved stone marking the causeway connecting Midtown to Hightown. Heavy flat steps rose from the street through the archway,
carrying pedestrians, pilgrims, to the heights of the cathedral city. Soon, the plaza before it would be completely blocked off by ferrocrete bulwarks and intertwined strands of razor wire stretched across the street. Aud thought it a thing of sublime beauty. The citizens of Almacia did not seem to agree. Proximity klaxons sounded, and angry shouts filled the air. Traffic, both pedestrian and otherwise, was being diverted down the few remaining side streets that hadn't been collapsed or blocked off, resulting in a traffic jam almost 60 miles in length. The local enforcers, with aid from the Cardinal Governor's bodyguards, were overseeing civilian operations, keeping them a safe distance from the defensive preparations, and from the Imperial fists. Aud was one of three stationed at this gate. The rest of the demi-company were scattered throughout the city, seeing to the preparations elsewhere. When the enemy arrived, they were to command these bastions as only they could. He clicked the vox-link that tied him to his brothers. Gerd stood atop the gate itself, aiding the Cardinal Governor's guard in positioning several heavy weapons. Calm was working at the opposite end of the plaza, seeing to the preparations there. Both responded with clicks of their own. They needed no words. The sound was enough to let him know their position. Aud closed his eyes as a breeze kissed his face. His helm was clamped to his thigh. He'd often found that working bareheaded helped engender confidence in mortal workers. His helm was too impassive. Without it, he could almost pass for human.
Hot work, my lord.
Aud looked down. The engineer in charge looked up, mopping at his face with a grimy handkerchief. The man's name was Targe, Aud thought, a native of Lowtown, normally responsible for the maintenance and repair of the access roads that led through the foundations of the city.
"My body temperature is chemically regulated," Aud said.
Targe nodded, as if he'd heard similar statements before. He continued to wipe at his face.
"Oh, the air settles in these streets something awful. Gets stifling in the lower parts of the sea. You wouldn't know about that, I expect."
"No, I am only just arrived."
Tarsh sniffed, leaned over and spat.
"Still, hot work."
Aud looked at him.
"Did you require something?"
Humans were usually in awe of his kind. Targe didn't seem the sort to be impressed with anything, however. It was somewhat annoying.
"No, just passing time."
Targe wiped at his neck and retrieved a flask from his coveralls. He took a quick slug and offered it to Aud.
"Care for a nip?"
"I do not nip."
"No?"
"No."
Targe nodded again.
"Don't think I could do without a bit of a drink."
He took another pull on the flask, as if for emphasis.
"No?"
Aud asked, without quite understanding why.
"No."
They stood in silence for a time. Targe seemed in no hurry to go anywhere. Aud stared at the engineer, trying to fathom a method of breaking this particular siege. He decided a change of strategy might prove effective.
"Is work progressing satisfactorily?"
Targe took a leisurely glance at the bulwarks. He took another sip from the flask.
"I expect so,"
he said eventually.
"Yours?"
Aud found himself nodding.
"Yes."
"That's good."
Aud nodded again. He was finding the rhythm of it now. It was not a transfer of information, but simply noise for the sake of noise. He could not see the purpose of it, but he would not be found wanting. Despite this resolution, he was relieved when the wailing of enforcer sirens broke the silence. He heard the growl of engines and felt a tremor run through the street. Suddenly, the engineers and labourers at the bulwarks shouted and scattered. A heavy vehicle, some form of ore hauler, slammed into the unanchored slabs and ploughed over them with a grinding rumble. It was almost as big as a battle tank, but not so imposing. There was an enclosed cab and a massive cargo bed in the rear. The wheels were meant for rough terrain, and easily carried it over the fallen bulwarks. A warning klaxon sounded as the vehicle thundered straight for them. Targe spat out a mouthful of alcohol and flung himself to safety. Ord, with his preternatural calmness, considered his options before deciding that disabling the vehicle was the best. There was no telling who was behind the wheel. Killing a frightened civilian would cause more trouble than it was worth. He pulled on his helmet as the vehicle barreled towards him, klaxon still wailing. At the last moment, he dived aside and caught hold of one of the rungs on the side of the cab. As he pulled himself up, he heard a shout from the cargo bed and saw a man, clad in stained labourer's clothes, wearing a bandolier of ammunition, lean over the edge. He gripped an autogun in both hands and fired. Ord ignored the drizzle of shots that caromed off his battle plate and continued to climb, drawing his combat blade as he went. Targeting runes flashed as he detected three more mortals in the back of the vehicle, all armed. The others were firing at a trio of pursuing enforcer rumblers, heavily armoured personal vehicles built to withstand gunfire and small explosions. The rumblers resembled Space Marine assault bikes, save that they were fully enclosed and topped by flashing lights and vox casters. The rumblers, unlike the ore hauler, couldn't make it past the tumbled bulwarks and screeched ignominiously to a stop. Ord considered the situation and concluded that the occupants of the ore hauler no longer counted as civilians. The others in the back had noticed him now and were panicking. They fired wildly, their shots barely scraping his paintwork. He paused, studying them, then turned and leapt from the top of the cab onto the front of the vehicle, crumpling the frame with his weight. In a smaller vehicle, that might have sufficed to disable it. This one would require a more significant outlay of effort. He scanned the hood, letting his augers read the shape of the engine beneath. A moment later, he slammed his knife down, piercing the hood and driving the blade into the machinery beneath. A sharp twist sheared through pistons and hoses. Lubricant spurted, dappling his arm as he withdrew it. The ore hauler groaned and juddered, belching black smoke from its vents. It ground to a halt almost in the shadow of the Pilgrim's Gate. He stood and turned. They were still shooting at him.
"Do you require assistance, brother?"
Gert asked over the vox.
"No." "You appear to be under attack."
That was Kaln.
"A momentary inconvenience. The enforcers are already moving to take them into custody."
Ord dropped to the street as the rest of the ore hauler's passengers boiled out of the cab. Like the ones in the back, they were dressed in a variety of styles and carrying the sort of weapons civilians were not allowed to possess. Criminals, he assumed. Perhaps trying to escape into Hightown before it was sealed off.
"Lay down your arms and you will be spared," he rumbled, setting his voice to maximum volume.
Casually, he flipped his knife into the air and caught the hilt.
"Resist, and I will be forced to chastise you."
Autoguns roared. Several of the men made a break from the Pilgrim's Gate. Ord darted into their path. His knife licked out, and a man's head rolled free of a spurting neck stump. He caught a second with a blow that broke ribs and punctured organs. The third fell back towards the ore hauler, emptying his ineffectual weapon into Ord as the Space Marine closed in on him. He caught the barrel of the weapon and crushed it easily. As he caught the man by the throat, an alert chime sounded. His battle plate systems had been running an ident check, matching the facial characteristics of the gunman to Lieutenant Calder's list of the planet's known criminals. It appeared that his captive was a person of interest.
"Your name is Gulln Veal. My commander wishes to speak to you."
His captive was badly scarred. One of his eyes was white from some long-ago injury, and his flurried features were riven by furrows of torn tissue. He clasped helplessly at Ord's fingers, trying to break his grip.
"Let me go! Let me go!" "No."
Ord turned as a combat shotgun boomed. He saw the last of Veal's companions fall, a smoking crater in his chest. Enforcers picked their way through the broken bulwarks, smoking weapons in hand, and one came towards him. A heavy-set woman, her carapace armour bore insignia of rank.
"You caught our fish, my lord," she said as she saluted. "Regulator Fane."
Ord tossed Veal to the ground.
"Take him with my compliments, Regulator."
"You have our thanks, my lord,"
the enforcer said as she knelt. She rolled Veal over and planted a knee in his back,
as she grabbed his hands in one of hers. A moment later, she had the restraints on. Veal was the last name on your commander's list. He must have heard what happened to the others. He's got friends in Hightown who might have hidden him.
His intentions are irrelevant, as he has been captured.
Veal gave a protesting groan as Fane dragged him to his feet.
I don't suppose you know why he wants them? She asked hesitantly.
Ord looked at her. She stepped back, dragging Veal with her.
Sorry, my lord.
Ord felt a flicker of sympathy. Mortals lacked the guiding certainty of Adeptus Astartes' training. It drove them to ask needless questions about matters that did not concern them. He inclined his head and sheathed his knife.
Apology accepted, Regulator.
Calder studied the data feed with satisfaction. The defensive preparations were proceeding apace, with little objection from the civilian populace. Aemon was making regular speeches, and his subordinates were spreading messages of calm through the populace. Around him, the strategium echoed with the sounds of orders being relayed and requests for ammunition and assignments being processed. Calder revelled in these moments, though he would never have admitted it out loud. The quiet before the storm, when the full artistry of defence was on display. He heard someone enter the chamber and turned. It was Tyre.
"We have a problem,"
the swordmaster said without preamble. He tossed a data slate onto one of the desks in the strategium and looked up at Calder.
"I just got an emergency vox signal from the Primus asteroid facilities. There's been a civil disturbance."
Calder looked down at him.
"I was assured there was no risk of such an occurrence. What can I tell you? Someone decided now was a good time to make a bid for workers' rights."
Tyre sounded more amused than anything else, though it was hard to read his buzzing tones.
"The enforcers stationed there should be able to handle it, but if not, sterner measures may be called for."
"Meaning?"
Tyre shrugged.
"New workers will be easy enough to procure once the planet is safe."
"You will kill them."
"We can't have an armed uprising on our doorstep on the eve of an invasion. Those facilities are too important to Almace's survival."
"I was not voicing an objection,"
Calder said.
"I will point out, however, that the mining facilities are extensive, and the miners know them well. Any armed response will likely be met by an application of asymmetric tactics on their part. They will not stand and fight. They will engage in hit-and-run attacks, as well as sabotage. The struggle will be protracted, and attaining victory before the enemy arrive is likely unfeasible."
Tyre frowned, but did not object. He knew that Calder was right, whether he wanted to admit it or not.
"So, what would you suggest?"
"Leave them, for the moment."
Calder looked back at the projection.
"Leave them? You stated that the enforcers would attempt to handle them. Let them do so. And if they can't?"
"Then we will deal with them," Karras said.
Tyre whirled, startled. The Raven Guard stood just behind him, head tilted. The data slate Tyre had deposited in hand. He scanned through it as he joined Calder atop the observation platform. Tyre's frown deepened, but he sketched a shallow bow and turned away.
You shouldn't tease them so, brother,
Calder murmured when the swordmaster was out of earshot.
My apologies, Karras said.
I've had a report from the warriors. I sent it to Lowtown. You made an impression on Gil. By all accounts, she's rousting every criminal in the city. In fact, we should be hearing from her quite soon.
Even as he spoke, an alert chime sounded. The doors to the chamber opened, and a group entered. Enforcers, mostly, escorted by a phalanx of the Cardinal Governor's Guard. Cybermastiffs prowled in their wake. Trapped between the enforcers was a smaller group of civilians. As the group came to a halt, the enforcers forced the civilians to their knees at the base of the observation dais. Three men, two women, all kneeling on the hard marble floor, manacled and chained. The cybermastiffs prowled around the chamber, their artificial gazes locked on the prisoners.
One of the enforcers, a heavy-set woman clad in ornate carapace armour, stepped forward.
"Regulator Fane, my lord. I bring a gift from Magistrate Gill."
Calder nodded and descended the dais.
"Please convey my thanks, Regulator. If you will wait for a moment, this will not take long."
He turned, studying each of the civilians in turn.
"You are the leaders of the 5 largest extra-legal organisations on Almace. Smuggling, prostitution, gambling, banned substances, weapon sales, theft, murder, piracy."
He ticked off each on his fingers.
"Between you, you control most of the crime on this world, if not the system."
Only one of them attempted to meet his gaze. A bald, broad-faced man in a silk jacket and battered fatigues. Cormas Belloc. His file scrawled across Calder's display. Charges of racketeering, extortion, murder and smuggling were the highlights. Belloc was an animal, but a cunning one.
"We know who we are," he said harshly. "We don't know who you are."
Calder looked down at him.
"Who I am is obvious. I am the Emperor's wrath manifest. His fist upon your shoulder. When I speak, it is with his voice. My commands are his. That is all you are required to know."
Belloc spat on the floor and tensed, as if waiting for a blow. Calder did not deliver it, and waved off the enforcers when they moved to do so. Calder looked at the other criminals.
"It is good that you are not cowed. Cowards are of little use to me. I need soldiers."
One of the others, a woman with tribal scarring on her cheeks and her hair cropped short, laughed sourly.
"Ha! We're not soldiers, though."
Calder looked at her. Again a file appeared. Stella Drum. Charges of assault, incitement to riot, extortion and arson were high on her list.
"No," he agreed. "You are officers. You all lead armies, however undisciplined. You have access to manpower, supplies,